This is the Navigating Adult ADHD podcast, here to help you navigate and thrive with ADHD in adulthood. I'm your host, Zena, and I was diagnosed at age 36. As with many ADHDers, I have a rebellious and nonconformist style. And that means that there will likely be swearing in the coming episode. Please be mindful of any little people. Welcome back, everybody, to Navigating Adult ADHD, where today we are joined by the amazing Sonia Gray. And you may know her from her podcast, No Such Thing as Normal, where Sonia speaks to experts and people with lived experience of neurodiversity and really helps us to better understand what it means to have neurodiversity and also how we can better support those of us who have brains that are wired differently. Also from the TV documentary Kids Wired Differently with her beautiful daughter, Inez. And Sonia also does a lot of things, which I think is probably perfect for a fellow ADHDer because you can't get bored. So you may recognize her from Lotto or her days in Shortland Street and many other broadcasting roles. Also, I have discovered that Sonia is a cricket lover. Interesting. So thank you, Sonia, so much for being here and sharing your ADHD story with us.
Oh, you're welcome. It's lovely to be here.
Awesome. Let's dive in by start out by telling us, how did you discover that you have ADHD?
Well, I think like a lot of adult women, quite by accident, my daughter, we were going through the diagnostic process with her and nothing kind of fitted, and we were going to see various different people, and ADHD became one of her diagnoses. And the psychologist that she was seeing at the time said, I always screen parents. You know, like, that's just how I do it. And I was like, hey, dude, I do not have ADHD. That's not me. And he said, just do the test, Sonia, just do the test. So I did this, you know, the pre-screening kind of thing. And he rang me on a Friday night, which I thought was odd, and said, oh, hey, I'm not ringing about Inez, I'm ringing about you. And I was like, oh, okay. And he said, I got your results from the, you know, the pre-screening, and you scored 100% for ADHD. And I was like, oh, okay. And I mean, I'm quite competitive, so 100% sounds great to me, but I was like, I don't really understand this. And he described it to me as basically, you know, your mental filing system doesn't work that well, but you're intelligent and you've managed to get through life, but this could potentially be the reason that you've struggled, you know, had a lifelong struggle with anxiety and depression and all those things, and just coping with general being a human being. And yeah, it was interesting. I rang my mum and she was like, wow, this kind of explains your whole childhood. And I was like, really? Like, you know, because as we all know, we have an idea of what ADHD is. And in my head, it definitely wasn't me. And I actually shelved it for a couple of years, partly because I was consumed with my daughter's situation, which was quite, you know, we were in crisis, really. And partly because I didn't really feel like I deserved to have this diagnosis. It was like, it was almost like it was a cop-out, because I'd really gone through my whole life feeling like I had this kind of just character flaw, that I couldn't do things in the way other people could. And I felt like I was, I don't know, I just couldn't get my head around it, I guess. And I think this is kind of common. Anyway, yeah, things transpired. I learned a bit more about it. I went to get a formal diagnosis, screening and diagnosis. And it all started to make sense. And when I think it was more when I read about the lesser known characteristics, I guess, of an ADHD brain is when it really sort of made sense to me. And I think the things like rejection sensitivity dysphoria.
Yep.
That's a big one for me. just not being able to do things that are boring, like actually feeling, it takes me three different sessions to empty the dishwasher because it's physically, I find it physically painful. Like all those little things. And people say, I remember going to my GP when after I got my, diagnosis, going to the GP, and she sort of listened and said, well, I mean, I lose things. Like that's just, and I think that's a common thing that we get, especially as adult diagnosed. It's kind of like people, I don't know, they downplay it. And it's like, yes, everyone loses their keys, but we go around in life just with this constant feeling like we've forgotten something really important. Or, it's just, it's very hard to explain, but it takes a toll on you mentally. And so that was kind of the beginning of what is a journey, really. It's not just like, oh, great, got a diagnosis. Everything's going to be all right. It's really unpacking all the stuff, unpacking your life up to that point, and learning how to work with your brain, which is an exciting process, but it's really tough as well. And I think it's important to acknowledge that.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. It's so much I think about learning to work with your brain. And I know for me, like I was fighting that for so long. I fought and tried to do everything like everybody around me, like air quotes, the neurotypical kind of way that I thought was the air quotes right way. I really fought with that for so long. And once you work with your ADHD brain, I think it definitely makes a big difference. Something that resonated with me as you were speaking. There are so many people who, as I've told them, I've got ADHD, and other people share this experience too, where they're like, oh, but I forget things, or I get distracted, or I can't remember names, or why I walked into a room. And somebody once said to me, yeah, well, everybody pees, but if you pee 50 times a day, something's probably wrong. And I've always loved that.
Oh, that is so
Right?
good. That
Like
is
something's
so,
probably needs checking out.
That is it. It's and it, because it's no one can see it, and we do a really good job of holding it together. It's very, very difficult for people to actually accept that this is a massive impairment on our lives, and it takes a toll. And this is in the work I do, this is kind of almost the most important thing that I'm trying to, or the biggest challenge, I guess, is trying to find a way to express and explain to society that this is a thing. This is not just kids behaving badly or adults just trying to find the easy way out or whatever. It's really real, and does take a real toll on us. On the other side, if we're in environments that are supportive and we feel okay about telling people where we need support, then we'll fly, and that's good for everybody.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's really hard to find that balance of explaining. Like, there are some things that are very difficult or challenging for us. And, the behavior that you may see is because there's such a struggle inside under the surface and you can't see that. But also, it's the balance of, and it comes with like a lot of po positive attributes that we can foster in kids or in ourselves. And, acknowledge and celebrate. So it's like a difficult balance sometimes to kind of clearly articulate.
Oh, totally. And I think, there's a lot of things that have led up to, I mean, look at the diagnostic criteria. It's all about what we can't do. For all the neurodivergent diagnoses, it's all about the negatives. There's nothing to say that, ADHD is a creative and think outside the square, and that's not in the criteria. So from that starting point, that medical model is just, I don't know, there is something wrong with you. So no wonder there's a stigma about it. No wonder, when I first got that phone call on a Friday night, and I texted two of my really good friends, and I was like, oh my God, I think I have ADHD. And they were like, oh, I'm so sorry, Son. And I was like, because I hadn't felt like it was a negative. I just didn't think I wasn't sure that I did have it. But that's, they saw it as shit, this is a bad this is a bad
Yes.
thing.
Yes.
And yeah, it would be wonderful to get to a point where you receive a diagnosis and it's like, hey, this is freaking cool. Like, these are all the
Yes.
things you may struggle with, A, B, or C, but there's ways to work around that. But
Yeah.
let's focus on all these wonderful, amazing things that you can do. And I want to clarify that by saying that not everyone has all the wonderful things in this, we're all
Yeah,
different, but
it's varied, yeah.
it tends to be that ADHDers do have all these just super, when there's something we're interested in, we just go and go and go and go. And, often to our detriment, but
Yeah.
it's just like if we, I always think in an educational setting, when you have a teacher that recognizes what the kid is into, and this is with across the board, dyslexics, autistic, all the neurodivergence, find the thing that they're into and help them learn through that because that'll get
Yes.
them on board. Otherwise, it's just like, it's just noise,
Yeah.
it's just
Yeah.
noise.
100%. Yeah.
And I think, what's something that I'm thinking a lot about at the moment, and I'm in pre-production for the second series of No Such Thing as Normal. And something I really want to focus on is trauma, because it's my belief, and I'm not an expert, but just in talking to, probably thousands of people now, the problem, in air quotes, is not the diagnosis itself or the brain, the differently wired brain. It's what we come to understand about ourselves from the earlier stage, that the way we are in the world is wrong. Now, and I have to be careful how I use trauma, because there are people that have had, terribly traumatic events that, you don't want to dilute that, but I don't know if there's a better word for it. The psychological trauma of being in a school environment and not being able to sit still and not being able to listen. And I remember from it as a at daycare, I have memories from daycare at just being frozen because I just wasn't hearing the instructions, like, okay, all the kids have to do, and just trying to follow everyone. And, like, just being in a, when you're in a daydream all the time, you miss the cues and you get in trouble. And then you go,
Yes.
okay, I've got to be hyper vigilant so I don't get in trouble anymore. Now, that starts at two. That doesn't set you up for being able to really trust yourself, being able to
Yeah.
trust your brain. And so we end up going through life. I mean, this is not everyone, but it's very common, going through life not feeling like we can actually relax because we'll drop the ball. And that's hugely damaging.
Yeah.
So that's something that I'm kind of working on and trying to, like, just see how we could, or, through the podcast and through other things, help ADHDers and other neurodivergents actually recognize the trauma that they have experienced, and through no fault of their own.
And
And
how that,
then, sorry, you
I
could.
was just going to say, and how that affects our self-esteem.
Oh,
I think there was
absolutely.
an episode, I think, of your podcast, I don't know which one, but there was somewhere in there, and I think you might have been talking to Alex, and he had said to you how, like, people with ADHD, there's research that shows that by age 10, a child with ADHD has heard 20,000 more criticisms than their peers. And, I'm working with women and mainly speaking to a lot of adults with ADHD and connecting with them, and self-esteem is something that comes up right away because you take that age 10 and you times it by however old we are now when we get that diagnosis, and it's like, oh wow, like we've had that message reinforced over and over, we're doing it wrong, there's something wrong with us, we need to do better, try harder, all of that. And as you say, like, it does, there is so much trauma. And I wanted to share with you, I once heard it explained like this, like, if you have like a lowercase t and a capital T, so you've got little t trauma and big T trauma. And sometimes it helps to explain it to somebody in differentiating that, big T trauma is some of the things that many of us would commonly associate with trauma, which is perhaps somebody who has gone to war or been through, an assault of some form. And
Yeah,
then there's a
or
little
child
bit.
abuse, or
Yeah, exactly. And then there's like lower T trauma, which the little T trauma, which is, and these things can fall into either category depending on the individual, but things like, perhaps being bullied at school or, being left out of certain events. Like there are things that all of us have experienced, every human being has experienced that fit into that little T trauma category. And I think for those of us with ADHD, we have experienced so much trauma, potentially in both of those categories, if we were to, kind of put it on a scale like that.
Absolutely. And if you think about ADHDers tend to be hugely sensitive, very sensitive. So, say in my situation, it wasn't that I was told off a lot or told I was wrong, but implicitly you get that message. And so you go, okay, this is how I am expected to behave. This is not, does not come naturally to me. I've got to put all my energy into being like this because it's me that's wrong. And to quote Taylor Swift, the problem is me. And that's yeah, it's very, that's interesting that, yeah, the little T. So it is post-traumatic stress or complex post-traumatic stress disorder, not necessarily from, yeah, a big T trauma event, but multiple kind of attacks on who you are. And through nobody's fault, I think that's the other thing that's kind of important, because you meet this resistance from society when you just try and talk about any of these things. It's like, oh no, well, everyone needs to be able to do this, and so you've kind of got to go gently, gently. It's like, it's no one's fault. It's just the way society is set up. There isn't really space to be not good at those little the things that everyone's meant to be good at. And now I can't think of any of those things because they're kind of subtle, and being on time and as an adult answering emails. And for example, for you to get me on here, I am so sorry, took a long time, because like I love this actual bit, the interviewing is great, but when an email comes in, a request, it's just like, okay, how do I deal with this? And I have a lot of them, and I can't categorize them in my mind, and it all feels overwhelming. And I just put it in the to-do list, which grows and grows and grows and grows and grows. And that stuff is the hard bit. And I'm always really aware of that when I'm, trying to talk to people who are neurodivergent. That is, I don't know why it's so hard for us. I mean, you might have a better, you might be able to articulate
Oh,
it.
I feel the same way about emails. I actually captured that, and I think it might have been in your Two Bears podcast, is it? Between Two Bears, that
Oh,
podcast. You guys had talked about emails, and I was like, oh my God, me too. The same with emails. I'm like, that's just one of the things. I would rather have a conversation with somebody. I would rather, send a voice message or something like that, but we don't have to reply in written form. For my brain, it's like, and I think this probably comes down to our executive functions, right? Because
Totally,
the various
totally.
managers of our brain are all trying to communicate together and work together to formulate this email and do these actions and write things on a to-do list. And they're just like, ugh, like they don't play well together sometimes. So, it's easier to go and do something else and close the laptop, at least for me.
Oh yeah, it is. It is. But it weighs on you. It's still there, and you feel, then there's the guilt, and then there's all the other things. And people, your husband or wife or whatever might say, just why don't you just do it? Just like set. Tap it out, send it. And it's like, I want to. You don't understand. I really want to.
Or the one I often get is like, but it's not that hard. I'm like, oh, but it is. It's different in here. Like, I know the activity of typing things and writing things and replying and pushing the button. That sounds simple, but all of the things that go into that, it's a multi-step process.
It is a multi-step process. However, if there is a time pressure, I can do it. Give me a time pressure, but otherwise it's like, and that links to this, our relationship with time, which is all a bit warped. And if it doesn't have to be done right now, then do we have to do it? Yes, it would be better. We know We know rationally it would be great to do it now and get it out the way, but I don't know why it doesn't work like that.
I also think sometimes, like I'll tell people, like sometimes there's a dopamine element there as well. Like we've also been taught that, what was that book? Eat the Frog, like do the hardest thing first. And I really don't think that that is supportive of ADHD brains, in that if you try and get us to do the hard thing, like there's going to be a lot of resistance. Whereas if there's something on that list that we can do that's easy, or that we want to do, like we get that win and we start to build the dopamine, which helps us to progress towards the harder thing. So I definitely think there's like a dopamine element in there as
Oh,
well.
dopamine is, we are dopamine driven to the, and you find yourself, I don't know if you do this, but if I've got things I have to do that are not, like answering emails that don't give me any dopamine, I might start doing one and then I'll go to a game on my phone
Oh,
to get
yeah.
a dopamine hit.
Totally.
But then I'm lost and I've moved on somewhere else and I've never answered the email and it's all over. But yeah, the dopamine thing is massive. And
Totally.
yeah, that's the we have to just kind of remember that. But that's the wonderful thing about understanding it. You then understand it's not your fault. Well, and so now I'm quite good when I remember at just noticing when I do have to do those admin type things like tax, which is the bane of my existence, or something like that. I just notice how I'm feeling. And one thing that I notice I do because I find it taxing, excuse the pun, is I stop breathing.
Oh,
Because,
interesting.
yeah. And then I read about this thing called email apnea, which I can't remember. Someone came up with it. And it's not, I don't think they were talking about ADHD as exclusively, but I would encourage your listeners to just notice what they do when they are trying to formulate an email and get through something that's giving them no dopamine, because we're making it worse for ourselves by holding our breath. Yeah. So just notice
I'm
if
gonna
you
pay
do that
attention.
and you just stop and do the long deep breaths and exhale a bit more slowly, and just because what we're doing is if we're holding our breath or breathing really shallowly, we're going into that panic state, and then our frontal lobe is completely out.
Yeah, we
So we
activate
can't
fight or
do it. So
flight.
it's all just this terrible. Yeah. So that's kind of interesting. Just the noticing, being curious as to what is going on in your body and brain when you're trying to do these tasks that you're really struggling with.
Oh, I love that. I wrote it down, so the email apnea, and I'm definitely going to pay attention to that. Thank you.
Yeah.
Hey, one thing I'm very curious about is when, like, after you got your ADHD diagnosis and you started doing a bit more research and kind of understanding what that meant and how it has impacted you, did you become more ADHD?
Oh, that's interesting. Maybe because I have slowly lost the hypervigilance. I mean, I do take the stimulant medication, which is really helpful. I mean, that is a tweaking, constant tweaking process and has its pros and cons. But when I'm working, when I'm filming, I'm filming a show at the moment, which means I have to retain a lot of information, and just yeah, my executive functioning needs to be on form, so I need it for that. But yeah, they have become more ADHD. One thing I do think, and I want to talk to an expert about this. I was diagnosed inattentive ADHD, and as I look back at my childhood and kind of just, just look inside at how I react to certain things, I actually think there's a lot of hyperactivity there that's been dulled. And I think this is common for women. I think, I wonder, and this is just me kind of hypothesizing, but I wonder if really we're all a combination, and women particularly are very good from an early age of at going, okay, that outspokenness and that impulsivity, no one wants to see it, so I'm going to just internalize that.
Shove it in.
And that's one thing, as I've become a bit freer with my ADHD, I've realized that I am like, I hear myself talk and I'm like, okay, I should maybe shut up now, but that hyperactivity side is definitely there. And it's interesting because as a child, I was pathologically shy. I was di My diagnosis was pathologically shy. And now, I'm talking to my mum, it's like, I think that, just going back to that, you realize the way you are in the world is not right. I think actually, I'm a loudmouth that has an opinion and has it, but it's like I can't trust my brain, so I'll just be quiet. I don't know, who knows, but it's interesting kind of what do you think? I mean, are you inattentive or a combination
So
or
I'm combined. Yeah, I'm
okay.
combined. But I have noticed ever since diagnosis that I have become more, I would say my hyperactive side has definitely come out more. Like I now, like I have like lots of fidgety things around here. Like I'm always kind of moving or stimming in some way and doing something. Like the hyperactive in me was definitely shoved inside, and that has become way more visible. Like when I'm in this seat, like I move around, I get up, I sit down, I move my legs, I change my position like all the time. And before, I think I had really kind of shoved that in. So a very similar experience to you. And I was the shy kid growing up. Like I was terrified of going to school and then changing classes and like, so shy. And that's interesting. I've never thought about how that could relate to my ADHD in that way.
I think definitely, but also, as an ADHDer, you're picking up so much more. We're so aware, we're seeing everything, hearing everything, so you're feeling, I believe anyway, we feel a lot more. So we feel the highs higher. Like you mentioned, I'm a cricket fan. I am so, when we do well, or I don't know, if Ishsota gets a caught and bowled, or he's a cricket player, by the way, or whatever, I go bigger than anybody in the room. I get so excited. If we're doing badly, I cannot watch. I have to be in another room. I can't bear, I just feel it all so much. And I think, with school and for you as a young person, just having to change classes, you feel everybody's emotions, you feel the tone of the room, you go forward into what might go wrong. Whereas it seems like on the surface, I mean, we know this isn't the case, but it seems like all the other kids are just going, oh, yeah, it's new year at school, and oh, yeah, I'm with that person, and let's just go with the flow. And of course, it's very complicated and everyone's different, but I think there is no way at that age you would have been diagnosed combined ADHD, because there is no hyperactivity. And that's why I still have concerns about the process, especially for girls, because you can do the teachers, I can't even remember what's it called, the form that they get, the teachers get to fill out
Oh,
in
like the
the
report
process.
card sort of thing. Like where you get
Yeah,
those, or a form that they take to the teacher for an ADHD. Oh, yeah.
I
I don't know
can't
what that's
remember
called,
what
but
the
yes.
acronym is for that, but for a kid that's not showing any outward signs of hyperactivity, well, the teacher's not going to record that. So it's just going to be like, no, they're fine. They're fine. And we still get that. And there has to be a better way of assessing, I think. And sure, there is no blood test. There's no, but really, I think we're still only capturing the kids that are quote unquote problematic for the majority of the time. You have to really be the squeaky wheel as a parent to kind of go, look, I know that the teacher has said everything's fine, but my kid is holding it together, massively holding it together, and I'm getting it at the end of the day. Or not, I'm getting it. You know what I mean? That they're letting it out at the end of the day, and they're under an extreme, the load is great.
I could talk about that all day. And I think like one of the things that I always get so frustrated about is how the average age for diagnosis for males is age 7, right? Boys are diagnosed age 7, whereas for women, it's like late 30s. And like you say, the system needs to change to take into consideration those little girls like me and you at school who perhaps had a really hyperactive, busy mind. And, we present so differently. something needed to change to take into consideration those people. Yeah, definitely.
And also, if I think back to my school days, I mean, I did well at school, but I mean, God, I just like I don't think anything really went in class.
Oh,
I mean, I
yeah.
just did what I needed to do, and it was like just. I just found it so boring. Unless I had a really, unless it was something like history that was really interesting. But and I found ways when I was studying by myself to make it interesting. But the actual classroom experience, I just felt so locked in that. And I probably was a little bit like chatty to my friends, and I never didn't get in trouble, but just that boredom is really horrible. And now having kids at high school, nothing's changed. And in fact, it's almost like it's just school to me feels like it's crowd control and excelling and excellence and not really finding out what it is about that. How are you? How is this child? What will help them to grow, to succeed? How do they learn? It's still very much, this is what we do, and you need to fit into this.
Or this is what works for the majority, therefore you need to get, this
Yeah,
is
and
how we're
it's,
going to do it.
I actually don't even know if it works for the majority. I think the majority can follow it fine,
But there could be better ways that are more
there's so
inclusive.
many better ways. And I don't know. This is just something that I'm feeling quite strongly about at the moment because I just see so many kids that, school refusal is just through the roof. And there is so much focus on uniform, for example, having the perfect uniform. It is so, that seems to be the most important thing. And it's like, okay, uniform, great tradition and everything, but what about the rest? What about the rest of this person? How are they? I don't know. That's I bring that up because it's just something that's in my head at the moment, and I'm probably will jump on this bandwagon soon. My kids will just kill me for it. But school to me should be a place of refuge for every single kid, and it is not. And people perhaps even listening to this will say, no, it shouldn't, because it's not meant to be fun and they're meant there to learn. And I would say, why should it not? Why should it not be a place to learn and a place of refuge? Can't those things be together? Can't it be somewhere you really want to go and then you learn? Because you're going to learn more if you're happy and feel psychologically safe.
Yes, you should feel safe. I think that's huge. Like
Yeah.
so many people, ADHD is like, I mainly speak with adults, but they talk about how they never felt safe, seen or heard in their school environment. And I think, straight away, when our guard's up, when we're activated in fight or flight and what have you, we're not going to retain any information. But like you say,
No.
like we can do things so differently. I'm reading this amazing book right now, and I think, what's it called? Visual Spatial Learner. But it talks about how so many people in the world now don't learn the way that we traditionally used to teach people in school systems, where you stick them down in a classroom and make them read and write and remember things. And it talks about how when we open up what that looks like to teach people with visual diagrams and stories and with creative things with their hands, when we do that, everyone benefits. Everyone. Like it's an inclusive way of doing things, and I just love that approach.
And that is the case for most of the things that support ADHD as a neurodivergent in general. People are like, oh, they're like getting special treatment and da, 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 da. They benefit everyone. Everybody benefits from, regular breaks and from having things not just explained verbally but on written as well, and all these things benefit everybody. But I think the resistance comes from, oh, I don't know, just we've always done it this way, so why should we change?
I think there's fear of change, but also people going, oh, that's too hard. That's too big of a thing to
And
tackle,
it's
perhaps,
not, it's just a change in mindset, I think. But For me, you know, it's a it's it becomes it comes down to justice, to social justice. And I think you know, ADHDers have been given the short straw for a long time, for forever. And there's all this talk about, and I'm sure you've had it as well, everyone's got something these days, and you know, everyone, you know, you don't want a label, and it's not a new thing. It's just that the kid that we used to see as, say, the naughty kid, now has a different label. That used to be their label, the naughty kid, and now, you know, a generation ago, and now it's ADHD, which is in a label in itself is not ideal because it has the word disorder, and it's not a disorder. That's what we've got. Yeah, it's trying to get everybody to sort of see, to broaden the definition of normal, I guess.
And that's such a big task, and I just want to say thank you because you're helping so much in that regard. Like, your podcast, No Such Thing as Normal, is amazing to help. Like, I even learned about other forms of neurodiversity that I'd never heard of just by listening to that podcast. And then I'm like, my brain, of course, is like a squirrel, like, oh, what's that? Let's go look it
Yeah,
up. You know,
I
like,
know.
I
I'm the
want to know
same.
more about that.
Oh,
So,
thank you. It
thank
is
you.
well, it's hard because there is so, you know, as you know, it's such a broad topic. But I think the reason that I wanted to do neurodiversity as a whole is that there's not these sort of definite lines between, say, ADHD, autism, dyslexia, neurotypical. It is this sort of fluid kind of thing, and if you're ADHD, there's 50% chance you'll be dyslexic as well. And so the problem that I had with my daughter was we got an initial diagnosis, which since is, I mean, she doesn't really fit any of the diagnoses. She's kind of a bit of everything, which is common. But once we had that diagnosis, it was just like, oh, that's it. There's nothing else. And I was like, something else is going on. There's more going on. And it was just that fight to try and get more because it was like, just, you're not accepting this, Sonia. You know, and it's like, I wasn't not accepting it. I was just like, this doesn't describe her. None of these things are helping her. There's more going on. And so with the podcast, I just wanted to look at neurodiversity as a whole, including so-called neurotypical. I mean, is anyone neurotypical? I don't know, but you know, people are closer to the center of the bell curve. Because you know, if you're an ADHDer and you're like, okay, I think I've got that kind of under control, but there's also some autism going on, characteristics or dyslexia. You want to be able to include that in there and address that as well, and not be like, oh my God, I have ADHD, but I'm still not coping. And you know, just really look broadly.
Instead of putting people kind of in a box and labeling them,
Totally,
like being
totally.
more, you know, open to seeing, like
And it's
the
difficult
nuances, the
because,
variety.
and this is the struggle I've had, is that if you go, well, everyone's something, and we're all on the this, you know, continuum and, you know, spectrum or whatever, then you're diluting the experience of those of us who have real impairment in need. So you have to have these diagnoses that, you know, you have to say, okay, there's ADHD going on, because otherwise you're constantly kind of going, it's not, it's just my brain. It's, you know, you people understand a formal diagnosis.
And
That's legitimate.
you can also separate yourself from it. Like, I think having the label, although I don't like the word disorder and I think we should change that, but having a label and being able to say, oh, no, that's just my ADHD. Like, today my ADHD is just on fire. Like, I'm just extra ADHD today. That's okay. Like, I can kind of, it helps me to create some separation from feeling
Yes.
like there's something wrong with me or, you know, that sort of
Absolutely.
thing.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's almost like, and that is great. And I like, for some people, it's a real identity, and that is awesome. I think the problem comes when you go, okay, so ADHD, that's over there. It's almost like you go, right, here's the diagnosis. Now let's learn about that person, because that ADHD does not necessarily describe who you are. You know, that's an aspect that points towards what could be going on. And it's easy to, as you say, oh, I'm a bit ADHD today. I do the same thing. But I'm thinking for my daughter, it's like, Okay, she's got all these various diagnoses, but who is she in? What are the things that she struggles with? So that's the kind of balance you have to get that this is real and it's a thing and it's not just using or being lazy or whatever. This is really dopamine works differently, the real thing. But then also it's different for you than it is for me.
100%. Like it is different for every single person. Like every person who has neurodiversity, like what their strengths are, their challenges, all of that, it is, so varied.
And then it's different on a different day. So depending on the sleep effect. So that's the other thing you struggle with. You know, a teacher might say to me, well, Inez was able to do that yesterday, so she should be able to do it today. And it's like, today is completely different to be asleep. Something happened here. There was a weird smell. There was a something. And that's hard for people to get their head around because we want to be able to make sense of things and go, okay, A plus B equals C. If we do that and that equals that. So it's a very challenging thing for the outside world to understand. And you have to respect that. I don't think if I didn't have NES and wasn't ADHD myself, I know that I would struggle to understand it.
Definitely. And I want to add to that, like when you're talking about like sleep can be a factor, I want to just put it out there, like a woman who has a cycle, that can be a very big factor too.
Totally. As
So,
women, we have a shitload to have to deal with. And I think that's why, as you get to, so many women are diagnosed when they had children because all of a sudden you have to be so organized. You're not even in control of your own life and you have to deal with these other little people. And that's just when everything just falls apart. And I
That,
think.
yeah, so definitely that, like, and also it's the change in hormones that happens then, or like as I started to experience, like I think I was 36, I still forget my age, but like it was, from 35, our hormones start changing, and that's why so many women in that window right now are getting the diagnosis is the change in hormones, which means dopamine levels drop, challenges increase, all of that. So
Yeah,
it's
there's a
a
lot. I mean, and
lot.
then we feel guilty because we're meant to be everything to everyone and everyone else is doing it all so easily. They're not.
Yeah, they're not. I was gonna say, like, it might look like it on social media,
Yeah, I know.
but
God.
reality is very different, right?
Yeah,
So tell me, like, how has your ADHD diagnosis positively affected you?
oh my God, it's so much the positives are completely outweigh the negatives. I don't even know where to start. I now recognize that there's characteristics that I just thought everybody had that they don't, like just things like intuition and kind of just seeing things in a different way, being able to, in a work environment, being able to go, hey, let's try this, and backing myself on it. Rather than going, oh, that's not the way we do it, so I won't. And just trusting that, allowing myself time to do the things I struggle with, and trusting that I'll get there, and it's a process. Sorry, I'm not being very specific because
I hear you saying in that, and let me know if I'm on track, but like making accommodations for yourself instead of expecting yourself to kind of do it like other people do it, like allowing accommodations for yourself where you need to, like being, I think, more kind and compassionate in that way, perhaps. But
And we talk a lot about ADHD burnout, and I didn't obviously didn't know it was ADHD, so I didn't know that these burnouts that I was experiencing were because of that. And now, I mean, I said to you yesterday, I was had a day in bed because I'd had such a hectic time, and I mean, I thought, could I be sick? But I just couldn't get out of bed. But I recognized it as ADHD burnout, and that recognized that I just needed to have that day in bed. And so I'll do that now, whereas before I would have been like, you can't just spend a day in bed and cancel your day. Like that's, so it's given me permission, I guess, to just do what I need to do. And in doing that, I'll tell you the other big thing that it has, and this is partly having a daughter who's neurodivergent, but I am far more empathetic and understanding of differently wired brains, and appreciative of what different people bring to the table and understanding when people don't reply to emails or whatever, or don't deliver or can't do social. So many people can't, social stuff is hard for them. And I never really understood that, I don't think. And now I'm like, if I'm organizing something, I'll say, hey, you know what? No pressure. Or if you want to come, be there for 5 minutes and go, that's great. If you don't want to come at all, that's great. Like, I just don't want to be that person that adds another bit of pressure to somebody's life.
Oh, I love that. Yeah, and I think like so much more awareness, really. Yeah.
Yeah,
So much.
it's a great, it's very freeing to kind of
Yeah.
just, we go through it, and I don't know, especially parents get a hard time, and it seems to be okay to kind of go sit down for coffee with another mum and have a gossip about another kid and their parents and what that mum did that, and if that was my kid, I would do that, and that's somehow allowable. And A, it's damaging, and B, it's just wrong. Like, we just
Yeah.
have this idea that parents should do things the way we're doing them, when we have no idea what the family situation is like, what that kid is like at home, what the parents are going through, what their personal, perhaps neurodivergent battles are. If the best we could do, if we want to do or say anything, is ask if we can give any support if we're seeing that something isn't,
Yeah.
and that's something that I want to talk about in my next series of my podcast, because I feel like there's a lot of people that are really liberal and loving and but still feel like it's okay to place judgment on other parents, and I don't believe that is okay.
Yeah. Oh, I'm with you. I'm so 100% with you. And it's funny because I have learned that, and through all of this research on ADHD and all the lessons and stuff, that many people with ADHD, we have a very strong value of justice and integrity. And like I see that shining through in you as well. And I'm like,
Oh my
yes,
God,
I'm here
yeah.
for
Oh
that.
my God, yeah. It is,
Yeah.
and all these things, you're like, I mean, people, friends saying to me, why do you care so much about that? Like, it's nothing to do with you. And I'm like, but I can't, if it's some sort of work situation that someone is in where they've, I don't know, haven't been treated properly, I feel like I need to go in and fix it. And
Oh
I'm just
yeah.
like, I just can't let this happen. Like, I need to fight for them, be in their corner.
It's like
And
a
now I
physical
get it.
response. Like I can't sit still. I gotta do
No,
something. Like,
no, no. And one good thing, I think, because you realize early on that just going in and yelling isn't great. But you develop these really strong communication styles. Well, I think I have, at least, of going in and being not blaming or attacking or but just sort of explaining the other person's side and how can we best do this, and all that stuff is, you've got to kind of look at what's the result I want at the end. I want, the say if it's a work situation with a friend of yours, you want the work to be still happy and the employee not to be pushed out or anything. You want to create a happy environment. So it's kind of just gently, what can we do? Yeah, I think that's something that I have learned. Yeah.
Yeah, I love the question. I just want to point it out to our listeners that you said is like, what's the result here? Like, what's the outcome I want? And I think that that's such a great question to have in mind when we go into those situations. And sometimes I know for me, it's like I've got to write some things down so that I remember when I'm in there in case I do get heated or very passionate. Like, come back to my little piece of paper with the outcome and the bullet points that I
Yeah.
made.
Yeah. That's great. God, I should do that. Yeah. Because we do, we just get so, our bodies just, and yeah, if you can just, whew, and it takes practice. All these things
It
take practice.
does.
It's not easy. And that's something I want to stress, like going through, for people who are going through getting a diagnosis or have got one, it's learning about yourself and how you can best operate in the world and what your role is in the world is a process. But I feel like for ADHDers, we do feel like, A, we feel like we've never quite lived up to our potential, but that can change. And B, we feel like we have a purpose or a role in the world, and I would encourage everyone to move towards that, because that's the thing where your all your energy will, you can channel it all. It won't be as effective over doing something that you struggle with because there's not enough dopamine or whatever,
Yeah,
it's boring,
totally.
but that combination of that just need for justice and passion and creativity and thinking outside the square means that we can make a real difference in the world or in our community, and that's really valuable. And it will be there, it will be difficult personally to get over the lots of different barriers it takes to get through that, but once you are, I think you'll fly, you know.
100%. So our audience is those navigating ADHD, and that's usually like adults getting diagnosed with ADHD later on in life. So one of the things I had thought to say to you is there anything that you would like to offer them, anything that you would like to say to someone who is newly diagnosed and just trying to figure all of this out?
Well, this wasn't the case for me, but for a lot of people, there is a lot of anger and heartbreak at having lived a life where they haven't been understood and they haven't lived up to their potential. And I think that it's a grieving process, and I think that's something you will naturally go through, and it's not uncommon. But alongside that is you wouldn't be the person you are without having gone through that, like those difficult years. I think all of that helps for this next phase of your life, So yeah, then just sort of embracing it as much as you want to. There's no rules. There are no rules. That is the biggest thing. You tell who you want to tell, you don't tell who you don't want to tell. A diagnose, and this is really important, a diagnosis is only useful if it's useful to you. So you do not and you are not under any obligation to tell anyone or to take it on in any way if you don't want to. And yeah, it's but also to gosh, it's so hard because everyone's different. But if you go down the medication route, to know that it might take 5, 10 times to tweak that medication in a way that it works for you, that's your right to keep going back. You don't, if somebody tells you, no, we're that's what it is, you're working with that, and there are lots of different options, not that many in New Zealand, but there are. So to do your research and to know that it is your right to keep tweaking that, because two people exactly the same age, weight, whatever, may have completely different needs when it comes to medication. In saying that too, medication is just a very small piece of the puzzle. It's not a silver bullet. It may not be any part of your puzzle. So it's, yeah. Okay, one last, this is my major thing that I want to
All right,
say
let's go.
for people that are newly diagnosed or going through the process. Embrace the fact that this is a really freaking exciting time. And exciting times always have highs and lows, but you're getting to learn about yourself, who authentically you really are. You've never had that opportunity to be you before, and this is it. And I think for some people, it helps finding a community of other women with who are ADHD, and so that you can just go, I do belong. Like the real me is actually okay. It's more than okay. It's to be celebrated. And I think you'll find, even if it takes a few years, that you'll kind of fall in love with this new you that can be, that has this freedom. So yeah, it's well, as much as it's a bit of a shock and all that sort of stuff, I'm excited for you.
Oh my gosh, thank you so much. That was beautiful. I love that. And everybody should know that you are doing a season two of your
Yes, I
podcast.
am. And I am looking for a lot of people to be a part of the podcast, those with lived experience. So I will tap you, Zena. But if
Please,
anyone, does, want to tell their story in as much as little detail as possible, there might be a spot for you. So I don't know what the best way to get me maybe on my Instagram.
I'll tag your
Probably.
Instagram in the show
Yeah,
notes
tag
for
me
people
on.
and they can
Yeah,
send
and
you a message and reach out.
okay. Yeah, that would be great. And I mean, I won't be able to include everyone, but I just want to have as many people with lived experience at different stages as possible. And there will be one episode on late diagnosis specifically for women, because that seems to be where most of the need is.
Yeah,
So
definitely.
thank you for
That's
doing what you're
awesome.
doing.
Oh, thank you. I think it's such a privilege to be able to do this and an honor to speak with everyone and share the journey and so on. One other sneaky question for you. Did I hear you're writing a book?
Yeah, I am. How did you hear? Did I say that or something?
It
Oh
was
my
in a
God, I
podcast
am.
somewhere, I think.
Yeah, yes. As an ADHDer, obviously, I've missed about three deadlines, and I have moments where I'm just like bang, 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 typing away, and then I do nothing. So it's a work in progress. And it will be, my poor publisher is probably like, oh my God, why did we take her on? But I'm so busy with other things, and it just needs to kind of happen organically, I think. So yeah.
We
And
can
then
all look
knowing
forward to
me,
it then.
it'll be a week where I just write the whole thing. But
You'll get into hyper
at
focus.
the moment,
Oh, I love it. All right. Well, I will link to all the places where people can find you, where they can listen to the podcast and also watch the documentary, which I thought was just really beautiful because that even helped me to better understand some of the different forms of neurodiversity and also like having children, what that looks like and what that can be like from the parents' perspective. So thank you again so much for the
My
work that you do in the
pleasure.
world. Hey friend, I know exactly what it's like to feel frustrated and confused with your ADHD and to wish that you could better understand what the hell is going on in your brain. And that's exactly why I created my coaching program, Thriving with ADHD. Inside Thriving with ADHD, you learn a step-by-step process to set and finally achieve your goals, to understand yourself and your ADHD. It's where you learn to feel better and manage your emotions and create systems and processes that work for you with your ADHD brain. This is designed for you to learn how to thrive with ADHD so you can create the life that you were meant to live. Visit zenajones.com/ADHD to learn more and book a consultation.